Welcome to the Round 8 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and I'm back this week with Bryce. Welcome back, mate.
Nice to be back.
And we've got CJ back on the show as well, mate. Welcome.
Thanks, Marcus. Hi, folks.
So why don't we give a quick update on how our teams went across the weekend, and I'll start first and just get the crud out of the way, and then we can get to happier times. Team went poorly again. I had a lot of money in bank that I probably should have upgraded with. My season's gone kaput, so I'm starting to do some interesting things. One of those is bringing in Will Day and hoping that he's a point of difference. He did get about 18 disposals, even though he didn't score a lot of points with them. But I'm slightly heartened by the performance. Even though McPherson looked decent as well, I think it's enough to keep his spot. So we'll see how it goes. So I brought in Day, and Sicily, I guess, was the guy I could have brought in, but his break-even was 122. Had a 40 in his price cycle from a couple of weeks ago. Unfortunately for me, he smashed out 149, which is the season for the year so far. Fantastic. So I suffered it a little bit. I think Mark, OFB Donkey, on Twitter mentioned he did Pitonade Gorn, so obviously he's laughing. I think if you add about the 100 points for either of those trades, I would be back onto a par week, but I was not. I'm so far behind, though, that it seems like it's not that hard to move up. So I still moved up 5,000 spots with a 21.77. This week I've got the cash for a double upgrade, and the team is going to look a heck of a lot more healthy. So I'm looking forward to this week finally being a good week for me. Bryce, how about you, mate? How'd you go on the weekend?
After that sob story, I feel bad that you actually beat me. I had a bit of a terrible week as well. I scored 21.28. So dropped about 3,000 ranks out to 9K. Had Pitonaise 32, Hills 49, Sarongs 42, Devon Smith 71, and Simpkins 57. So that really hurt, despite having Petrarca and Sicily and Viney pumped out a 120 and Grundy's vice captain score of 144. So not too bad, a bit of not too good. Had Fife on the bench. And I need to think about what to do with trades this week. Think about the Pitonet in the bin and also looking at Bailey Smith and Gorn as trading options. So looking forward to your advice on the show.
Awesome. CJ, how about you, mate? How are you going so far?
I guess I'm here to bring the average up a little bit. I thought I wasn't having a great week, but Monday absolutely delivered. I ended up with 22.78, which puts me just outside the top 1K. Jack Steele is an absolute stud. I was watching a fairly bad game of football and just loving every minute of it. Sicily was good. I had Pitonet, which obviously was less good. But between Dude and Jack Steele, my Monday really got me back something respectable.
Yeah, Dude was one of my bright spots in the team, fortunately enough, in the team of otherwise disasters. Yeah, certainly interesting times in Supercoach at the moment. As of recording, I mean, we're only minutes out from the announcement of the fixtures across rounds 9, 10, 11, and 12. There's obviously a lot to play out in terms of Supercoach also making some decisions about how to handle some of those things. Some of the base assumptions that we've taken from previous decisions is that, you know, in round 10, we're expecting four teams to be missing: Frio, West Coast, Hawthorn, and Carlton. We'd expect that there would be a best 18 during that round. In round 11, we only have two teams on the bye, GWS and Sydney. Again, you know, on precedent with Essendon and Melbourne, you assume it's best 18 then. But then you don't have any teams missing in round 12s or round 9. And we don't really know how the remaining 10 teams are going to have their bye staggered as well in the remaining rounds after that. So we're literally minutes from seeing this announcement. And I think the tack that we're going to take in this show is just talk about the players almost in isolation from some of these larger strategy points and try and give some advice around that. I already have some time scheduled with Mark tomorrow during the day to have a bit of a yarn for our Patreon. So we'll try and put something out there by lockout. But just to give you all a heads up, you know, there's a lot of new information, and some of it we'd just purely still be speculating until we hear from Supercoach as well in terms of their subsequent decisions. So just understand that as we're going through the advice that by the time you hear it, I mean, there's a chance that strategy might dictate moving in a very strong direction one particular way. Certainly the initial thinking would be that Melbourne Essendon players, which we already were probably thinking in the round prior, they won't be facing a bye during this upcoming period because they will have been treated as though they've already played their bye. And so relatively, you know, Max Gawn's obviously a bit more attractive and so on. But it's just a very interesting situation where, you know, even different number of teams playing in different rounds, a best 18 system is going to much more easily hide GWS in Sydney in round 11 versus when we've got Freo, West Coast, Hawthorn and Carlton round 10. So a lot, just a lot to play out. Bit lost for words, really. Bryce, yeah, any thoughts, mate?
Yeah, I mean, it just dropped. So we're just trying to break it down a little bit and started to look at some of the players that might be missing in the next little period of time. And I think with a buy strategy generally, it's to target the teams that have already had a buy or the ones that have the buy furthest out. So at the moment, we're typically probably targeting Essendon and Melbourne players and probably trying not to bring in players that are about to have a buy in a couple of weeks and look to target them after the buy. So unfortunately, we haven't been able to plan for this situation from our round one starting teams. And we might be stuck with quite a few West Coast, Hawthorn, Carlton players. But if we don't have them, then the perfect opportunity is to target them after their round ten bye, and then start to target the players as they come out of their bye. But yeah, generally also trying to target the best players and the players of the most value. So considering all of those factors with each of the trade-ins over the next couple of weeks is going to be pretty critical. And then also with the rookie trade-outs, looking to hold rookies up to their buys and then looking to move them on rather than necessarily at their peak price. So lots of things to think about this week before Thursday games hit. Is it Thursday this week or is it a Wednesday game? Maybe that's the next
Thursday.
Round
nine. Wednesday round nine.
Yeah. So yeah, any thoughts from CJ? It's all very fresh for sure.
The main thing I'm worried about is just the like back to back like
when
like
do we round, record the
round
podcast?
Finishing and yeah, exactly. Like the planning of teams is going to be very difficult. I think the main thing to keep in mind is there are still a lot of people who are carrying people who are more likely to get dropped, like your Nobles. Like Brandon might come back into the team, but I'd be looking at moving on rookies who aren't playing over guys like Stasevich and Buderick and King, who seem to be a lock to play pretty much every single week. Because when you're down to best 18, just having warm bodies sometimes is what gets you through the bye rounds.
The main thing, though, I guess, to still balance out is that you can make some of these decisions in terms of optimizing for buys and when people are playing and so on, but ultimately you still need to select the right players. There's no point selecting a guy who's not a true premium just because he plays another extra non-true premium game. You're better off still picking the right players, but where it's marginal, where an extra 5% might make a difference, that's when those bonus games will come into factor a little bit more.
Sure. I was just going to add, another general consideration would be around the, I guess, condensed fixture and the need for teams to be resting players. So potentially players that are more prone to injury might be more likely to be rested. That would be another thing that I'd want to consider with the trade-in of players is that risk to injury and likelihood of being rested as well.
Now, thing to note, most of the rounds don't really sort of finish at the same time. So round 9, for example, finishes on the Sunday. Round 10 finishes on the Friday. Round 11 finishes on a Wednesday. And round 12 finishes on a Monday. So that is probably one of the things that to keep in mind is that it will almost feel like it's fairly boundaryless, I guess, between the various rounds. But there'll still be a cutoff time where prices will change and you'll need to still center around that and just be aware that that changes week to week. So to the podcast recording, we're going to have to figure something out as well. All right, let's go through some questions. And again, as I mentioned at the top of the show, we'll focus a little bit more on the tangible players that we can talk about and stick to that a little bit more, and we'll do an update. Before I get into the questions, though, just mentioned that our Supercoach Coach Patreon prize goes to the leader of our Patreon group at the end of the year. I haven't really given too much of an update since the start of the year, but Jack, his team is currently coming 224th after scoring 2405. I think the next closest Patreon is in the 600 mark. I see you down there at 1100, CJ. So you're in it with a shot for sure. But we'll give a bit of a shout out to Jack, who's coming 224th with a score of 2405. And anybody who might be tracking Faz, who's been on the last few weeks, he's sitting at 230. So he continued to move up, which is good news for him. All right, let's talk some rookies. And our first question is from Matthew Donnelly. He was basically asking about last week's double down, meaning that a lot of people would be looking at double ups this week, and especially with Bailey Smith type, reducing the cost of potential ins. It's certainly a worthwhile question, you know, whether or not you should be looking at any rookies. Are there any rookies that are tempting enough to stop you double upgrading, or should you just proceed with that strategy? So out of the rookies that played on the weekend or debuted, he's flagged Waitman, McKay, Minchington. I think Waitman for me is probably the one that really stood out for the Bulldogs. Bryce, you have any perspective on some of these new rookies, mate?
I think that some people might be facing a double upgrade, but some people might be looking for a one up, one down in order to try and get Max Gawn in. So I think that finding some good rookies being important this week. I have no particular views on Mitchington or Waitman. There was a few more higher price guys that might be more appealing for scoring and job security. So it'd be interesting to hear your views on what you think of some of the lower price guys versus the higher price ones, which might have better scoring.
Yeah, I know that job security is certainly playing into account as well. And Andrew McPherson even is a player that he's already gone up in price, but certainly I know some individuals are looking at bringing him in a week late, including our own FB Donkey. CJ, any thoughts on McPherson? Do you have him?
I don't. I went the usual Raikkonen and Simpkin last week. If I hadn't gone double down and had a bit in the bank, I would probably be considering him as he'd probably be my number one target for a rookie to bring in this week. If you're looking at someone kind of sub 200K, Waitman looked good. That first mark and goal was pretty spectacular, but I think that probably accounted for about half his points. Yeah, I'd probably be leaning towards McPherson at the moment.
Waitman, even though he looks like he could be a bit of a patchy scorer, he did show a fair bit of composure, marking ability, goal nous and that sort of thing in his first game. He certainly will play again next week, you would have thought. Wouldn't mind going for him, but otherwise, Andrew McPherson, he is a mature-aged rookie. I think he's about 21, 22. And importantly, he also gets quite a few intercept marks. So I think this year we're noticing that the marking halfback players are scoring better than the pure rebound halfback or disposal halfback players like Laird types. And certainly he fits more into the intercept marking type, which is you certainly would prefer to see.
Yeah, so scores the last couple of rounds with 76 and 52. I think the 52 was scaled down from 60. Two reasonable scores, 158. He's probably the person that I'd be targeting.
All right, on to the next question. And this one's from Gavin Cums on Facebook. He picked up Rankin and Day last week, and he's asking, is it too late to grab Simpson this week? Now, Simpson's actually gone up quite a bit. He's 185 now, so he ain't coming cheap anymore. What do you reckon? Would you still pay that amount of money for Simpson? I know there were job security concerns last week when he was presented on the show, and I don't know if they necessarily go away, even though Joel Selwood obviously did a bit of an injury.
I think his job security is a lot better. Having Ablett out, I think, also helps his job security a little bit, because we seem to have quite a few guys who can play that mid-forward role. So I think there's probably a spot in the team for him. Clark going out as well is probably another boon to his job security. I think it's really his role to lose, but I can't really see, other than like Constable might be pushing to take his spot, but I think given Geelong's injury list, the job security concerns have kind of evaporated after losing another couple on the weekend.
All right, we'll go to the next question, and this one is from Dennis, and he's asking whether or not Sam Mays is a consideration. Bryce, any perspective on Sam Mays, who scored 115, and he's about 200K, so bit of a potential stepladder selection. I don't see him as a natural keeper, but he has averaged 80 in the past, so certainly fits the profile.
He managed to get around the 85 mark. He's set to make fairly good cash, 50K price rise in the next two rounds, and then in three rounds would make about 136K, actually up towards 200K if you played him out the season. So some pretty good cash generation, potential scoring. I think if I was going to pay over 200K, he'd probably be the one that I'd target, but I'd probably want to hear from some people who know Port Adelaide a little bit more than I do as to whether his job security is decent there, because I wouldn't want to bring him in expecting 80s in scoring and to make that cash if his job security wasn't safe.
I might prefer around the same price point. I think Egmalesi Smith might be a valid consideration for Richmond. Seemed to be playing Bashir Hooley's role on the weekend and scored very, very nicely, moved quite well. The only concern is, you know, it's a fairly big risk at a price that most of our rookies are only just getting above at the moment. I tend to be more inclined to go down to the guys who are, you know, the 150s or less in price, rather than taking someone at what is quite an awkward price this time of year, because it doesn't really allow you to do a proper upgrade. It's kind of like a half a down, which in the scheme of things can really throw your upgrade cadence off.
Yeah, I think another point I'd like to add there is that it gets halfway, we're almost halfway through the year, and it's almost the time when the rookies that we're trading in are the guys that we're going to keep for the rest of the season. So even if they're set to make money, we might not be able to trade them out and use them as an upgrade. So they might just be ones that we're sitting on the bench later in the season, hoping will be available to score for us. And if their job security isn't that great for later in the season, could end up with a lot of guys on the bench that are worth some money that you can't actually trade out and contribute to an upgrade. So that's, I guess, some things that I'd be considering over the next few weeks. The rookies that we bring in, we might not be trading out anyway. So something to think about.
Definitely. All right, let's move to some trade out candidates now. And the first guy who's been the player on everybody's lips, really, who has him especially on field, is Mark Pitney. So we had a question from our Patreon, lickety-slurp about him. And after a 32, I guess major concern is it's also going to stall his potential to really increase in price over the next immediate weeks. The fact that Pitney on-field owners would be either missing Gawn or Grundy in most cases. There's just a lot of points that are currently being given up to Max Gawn as well, and that's certainly increasing the focus on Pitney and his poor scoring. I know I've looked very enviously at Mark's plus 150 point trade from last week. I wonder whether or not we're chasing last week's points, though. He's still averaging 90. Max Gawn, you know, he's now up at the 800 mark. If you're trading Pitney, you're ideally trading him to a top-line ruckman, so you wouldn't accept much less than a Goldstein, Gawn, Grundy type, and maybe Tim English starts to come into that after a 200. But, very, very interesting. I've seen a lot of mixed opinions on whether or not to hold Pitney further or to cut your losses. I've been given advice to hold off on Lachie Neale and wait for a poor game. But the rhetoric around a ruckman and Gawn seems to be a bit different.
Yeah, there's a lot of things to consider here. There's firstly the Pitney trade out, and then there's the Gawn trade in part. But I guess looking at the Pitney trade out part in isolation, obviously 32 is a terrible score, and you've got more than rookies. But apart from that, he's had two scores of 130s, a 94, 83, and 75. If he was even to go back towards that 80 scoring range, he would basically get back to sustaining that price point, and you'd probably almost be happy to have a regular 80s scorer on field through the buys. He just lost a ton of cash this round, If he went back to 80 scoring, he would lose another couple of 20Ks in the next 2 weeks before then kind of stabilising in price. So if you needed to hold him, you probably could, but you'd want to do it for a few weeks and then hope that your trade-in targets for him are available in that period. And I guess the flip side of the coin is the Max Gawn and what's going to happen with him. So you probably have a question about him, so I might leave that for another point. At this stage, I'm ready to trade Pitney out, but it depends on who I can move him to, and I really want to move him to one of the top-line guys. I can't see wanting to have anyone else than Gawn. So really, if I can't get to Gawn, then I might be forced to hold him for a few weeks, upgrade around Pitney and Gawn, seeking value elsewhere on the field to try and get the best value for points, and then look to trade him in later. But all this is pretty fresh. It's only been less than 24 hours since Monday's lockout, so I'm still working around the options that I have in front of me, which might require me to package up Pitney and Fife in order to get to Gawn, and I'm not sure I'm that keen to do that because I'd rather upgrade around them. CJ, you're a Pitney owner as well?
I am. I was a relatively happy Pitney owner right until last week. Last week was the straw that broke the camel's back. I think just watching him, he wasn't going anywhere near, like he was just standing around packs. Like he wasn't presenting, like he wasn't even like looking to get the hands off from anyone in a contested situation. Just the way he was moving was, yeah, pretty, he looks like he needs a week off. So I think looking at that, and given he's got Goldstein coming up this week against North, I'm pretty skeptical of him actually being able to return to that 80 scoring. I feel like
he scored 139 against Gawn. So
did you watch him on the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, clearly a player looks bad when they score 32, but you did score 139 against Maxi as well.
Yes, it's true. It's true. One. Yeah, that was also his first game in, though. I think maybe 7 weeks of playing solo ruck might be catching up with him, or 6 weeks of playing solo ruck. Like, I think he just looked pretty gassed, was kind of the observation I had. So I think I'm pretty set on trading him out this week. I can see a reason not to, but... yeah, for me, I think he's the most logical rookie of all of mine to trade because he's kind of peaked-ish in price, more so than most of the other people I still have in my field.
Well, it really can vary so much, I mean, in terms of how this works out, right? Like if Pitney starts to stall or Gawn maintains a 150, yeah, it's going to really be hard to succeed without trading Pitney to Gawn this week. But then, you know, on the flip side, if Pitney returns to even 100 average, which isn't that crazy considering he's averaging 93 after a 30, and Gawn returns to closer to 135, 140, which is still really high, you're then only talking about a price differential of 35. And I'm sure that you can get, you know, more points than that on field upgrading, you know, by bringing in two cheap premiums versus, you know, spending that 350 on just a single upgrade from Pitney to Gawn. So I honestly don't think that it's easy for anybody to give this advice without like a crystal ball. Like the ability for this to work well and work badly is equally present, I think. I can see Gawn returning to some sort of a norm. Nobody's ever averaged 150 since I've been playing Supercoach, and it's nice to think that he will because everybody always looks great when they're scoring great, but all it'll take is one poor game to bring things back to slight normality, and you've seen Lachie Neale do that coming back to 140 after an 80 this week, and Simkin too, right? So that's something to keep in mind. I think probably the other player that I draw some parallels to is Jack Viney. It's easy to be really caught up in the flavor of the month stuff. He dropped down to 490K after a 60. He's since scored two 120s. After the 60, you know, I committed as an owner to just hold on and to ride it out. His break even's now 55, back at 490K. I'll probably be able to trade him up at 520. And I think something fairly similar with Pitney can happen is just that he doesn't really have that much downside from 400K. So I both like and dislike trading out Pitney. I really think either sort of can work. And so it's almost what resonates more with you. I don't really know I'd be pushing anyone down one path over the other personally. Any final thoughts on Pitney before we move on to the trade-in targets then, and maybe Maxi Gawn?
Yeah, I probably have, I guess, a scenario to pros, and it probably segues well into the Gorn conversation. So there's 2 points. One is that Pitney looks to have a buy coming up fairly soon, so you probably need to trade him at his buy or hold him through. So that's 1 point. And I guess the second part is I've got two options presented to me: upgrade Pitney to Gorn, which would use all my cash in bank, and it would be a one up, one down. The other option I have is to use cash in bank and do two upgrades to two of my rookies. So the two upgrades would be someone like Bailey Smith and Hugh Greenwood and Pitney versus two rookies on field and Max Gorn. And so if you start to look at that as a comparison, two upgraded forwards such as Bailey Smith and Hugh Greenwood, or throw in whoever the two best upgrades are, and Pitney, who's, if he returns to 80s, is comparing two on-field rookies, which could be scoring between 30 and 60, plus a Max Gorn on a good day, 180. If he returns to the norm, it's 130. So then if you start to weigh those two up against each other, points on field might be better in the upgrading the two rookies. So I'm really starting to look at those types of things to see what my best option is, and starting to take the emotion out of that really shitty score from Pitney and just look at it in a bit more of a longer term thing and what I should do this week. So at this stage, I'm not decided yet, but yeah, they're the types of things that I'm playing with.
And I'm definitely resonating with that. And because of that, I think I'm a lower likelihood to bring in a Max Gorn. I think you just want to be aware, though, I mean, if you're making that choice individually, not you per se, Bryce, but our listeners, is that the reason why Max Gorn is so good is because he's so damn consistent as well, and he's doing it every single week. So you take the risk against him, but there's a very good chance that you will be punished for that, despite just because he's that bloody consistent. When you trade in these two premiums, if either of them have a bad week, that's enough to tip the balance in Gorn's favor if he just keeps knocking it out of the park, and that's kind of what's happened so far. So it is tinged with some doubt, some risk, but I think, you know, it is the right thing to try and do, which is squeeze the most out of your trades right now, and that obviously wouldn't be bringing in somebody whose price point is very concentrated and would restrict your other potential moves and bring in some negatives from that point of view as well. Anyway, I think a bit more to digest on that one as well, just in terms of the buy for Pitney. I mean, really, that might change things a fair bit, right? Like if he's missing in 2 weeks, then all of a sudden you're talking a potential plus 150 for good. Yeah. So we'll leave that.
Yeah, I guess one more point on that. It also means that given Pitney's 32 is going to be in his price cycle for the next couple of weeks, it doesn't really give him a great opportunity to kind of get his cash level back up to that like 400, 420 that he should really be sitting at before he has his buy, which I guess is kind of an argument maybe to say like he might be worth a trade out.
I think honestly, if you were keeping Pitney this week, you wouldn't be looking to trade him out before the buy. Yeah. You'd look for Gorn to be the last upgrade.
Yeah, I think you have to. Like, you either. I think if you stick with Pitney this week, you're holding him for another quite a bit.
Yeah,
and I think it's difficult because it looks like Carlton has that that monster buy as well. So you're going to be missing a lot of players. So that's probably going to force the hand. Are we going to talk about Gorn now? Because I got some.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Gorn's scoring has been amazing this season. I guess with taking round one out, because that was kind of before the normal season. I mean, even with it in, he's averaging 153. Taking that round one out, he's averaging 165. So crazy numbers. How is he doing it so well and so consistently high scoring? He has actually had a pretty easy run for the first half of the season. His round two score was against Pitney. 184. He had a bye against Essendon. Round four, he played Geelong against Port, 141. Round five, he played against Richmond, who had Naik and who got injured, and backup ruckman as Choi, he scored 163. Gold Coast, Melbourne won by 14 points against Wits. He scored 153. That's probably a really good score. And then he played Hawthorn. Melbourne won by 43 against McAvoy and scored 185. So there's a lot of games there that they either won or he was playing against a poorer ruckman. What's going to be the expected scoring going forward when he's playing a better ruckman or Melbourne aren't winning? And I guess looking at the short term, he's got a pretty tough fixture coming up. And maybe I'm clutching at straws here, but just even to see his scoring go down to some kind of normal mean around 130, that would see his price drop to around the 730K mark. His fixture for the next period, he's got Brisbane this week, which are a hard team. Ruckman probably medium with a McInerney-Martin combination, which might look to target him. You always seem to target Ruckman after a good week. And then his round 9 to 12 fixture is Port Adelaide, which is a good team. Medium Ruckman if Lysette's playing. He then plays Adelaide, who are an easy team, but their Ruckman's pretty good in Riley O'Brien. Then he's got North Melbourne, easy team, hard ruckman, and Collingwood, hard team, hard ruckman. So potentially a harder draw for Gawn to potentially affect his price, and which means that you might not be getting what you're paying for him. He's priced at an average of around 154. So if you're paying that cash, that's really what you want on field. If you can get better value elsewhere, such as a Bailey Smith, who's priced at around 81, and he returns you 105, you're getting 20, 25 points more than what you're paying for. And that's the value that I'm looking to target this week potentially and not bring in Gawn.
No, I think certainly before the round, like round 10 bye, I'd be maybe looking a little bit more closely. So before Pittenay goes off, but I would at least want to see how the next couple of rounds pan out. And a little bit is just because it'd be interesting to see how he goes against Brisbane. As you mentioned, they do restrict opposition ruck scoring reasonably well, even if Steph isn't still killing it in terms of a disposal point of view. His last three scores against Brisbane, 46, 97, and 78.
Yeah, I think the only point for that score last year, I think he might have been injured for the game. But, yeah, those other two are quite interesting, and that probably was when Brisbane weren't as good the years prior to last year. So, and now Brisbane are better. Their midfield's better, so he's not going to get as many hit-outs to advantage potentially. But, maybe I'm really over-analysing it and clutching at straws, but... yeah, it's something that I'm thinking about before paying that much for a ruckman, that we want to average 154 because that's what we're paying for him. And I guess the other thing that is not considered in all that value consideration is that you want a captain that you can double the score of. So Max Gawn has been pretty reliable backup. If you didn't have Grundy and Neil already, then there's probably more waiting to actually getting Gawn in. So you have two really good captain options each week. And I have Grundy and Neil at the moment, so I can potentially take Gawn on.
One of the points I think in favour of bringing in Gawn is if you don't have probably like Lachie Neil, just having that second captain option. Because I think this week I was rooting so hard for Grundy to have a good score because I really didn't feel confident putting the C on anyone else. Unfortunately, he did. But I think, yeah, Gawn does buy you a little bit of peace of mind there. But, yeah, definitely anyone at 776 is just a ludicrous price to pay for anybody. But I think much more than Lachie Neil in previous weeks, Max Gawn's someone I'm actually, like, very heavily considering. He just seems to be absolute super coach gold. Takes a lot of contested marks. Melbourne likes to kick long to him. Hit outs to advantage. Kind of does it all, really. But yeah, I think 776 is a far too high price to pay without at least like very heavily assessing the other options that you can look at.
Look, Mark made the call last week. He's 150 points better off. Like that's how quickly Gawn can put the equation to bed. And then that's what makes this tough. But I think in trying to find edges, which this show is really trying to help you to do, the sensible thing for us to present is that there's an edge in not picking Gawn. It comes with a risk, but we're here to present that edge. And I think it's a very sound strategic point that appears counterintuitive, but can actually be a valid and in fact strong strategy.
So just a question for you, gents. What do you think Gawn averages over the next 3 weeks or even scores for the next 3 weeks?
3 weeks, I'm going to punt on a lower score, like 120, 125.
124 next 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Pyro, so if I can get that in writing, I'll absolutely take that. I just from watching him, I really can't see him slowing down. I think he's just going to keep maintaining that 150 average, which, yeah, saddens me to say, but I think, yeah, I can't see enough reasons as to why he'd really, really drop off.
I don't think he needs to drop off, though. He needs to maintain an unprecedented, exceptional level of scoring to maintain 150. Even Gary Ablett didn't manage that in his prime, right? So, yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily as easy a task as we make it out to be, even though he's already averaging 150 today. Like, I don't think it's a given, right? Like, oh, he just has to maintain it. No, he has to do something we've never seen before.
And when we saw that Lachie Neale was averaging 150, 151 from rounds 1 to 6, and then just dropped to 87. So they're all humans, and they're potentially going to have a bad game. It's going to be a condensed fixture as well. So the potential that they'll, even Maxi Gawn might get tired. Maybe the preseason knee injury he had might catch up with him. But yeah, he's a little bit superhuman at the moment. And do we think he's a better ruckman than Brodie Grundy?
I personally don't, but
I do. I'd pick, if I was starting a side, I'd rather have Gawn than Grundy as my as the best, like, clear best ruckman in the league. But it's not by much. But I think I have him, like, just a slight cut above at the moment.
I mean, from a Supercoach point of view, the part that will be challenging for Grundy to replicate with Gawn specifically this year, I think, is the intercept marks and the fact that Collingwood are so strong they don't need Grundy to get out of situations, whereas Melbourne, it appears like they have no other option except to go to Max Gawn. I don't know. It just doesn't feel like they're looking for anybody else but to find him on the wing or find him. It just that part I think is hard for Grundy to compete with. If Grundy was in a team that was more dependent on him, maybe that might look a bit different. Certainly, in terms of playing capability, I'm a big Grundy fan. So
he's only averaging 133 at the moment.
Well, I mean, you know, and let's talk about the two other potential trade-in options, and that's Todd Goldstein and Tim English. Now, Goldstein's averaging basically a bit above Grundy, and he's cheaper at 660, so he's 100K cheaper than Gawn. For me, if you really want to upgrade Pitney, like, I understand that Gawn is clearly, you know, looking like the top ruckman right now, but I really question whether or not, you know, it's a sensible risk trying out a Goldie instead if it's really going to impact your other upgrades elsewhere. 100K is a lot. Goldie's been a top ruckman before. He's averaging 135. Now, if you think Gawn will come back to 140, you're only giving up 5 points for, you know, let's say 100K, and you still get to lock away, you know, a top two quality ruck. Tim English is obviously a bit more speculative because he's never averaged 130 before, whereas Goldie actually, he's done that yonks ago, but he's done that. You know, that's the other element that's a bit interesting is that, you know, you're not necessarily committed to doing Pitney to Gawn. I could do Pitney to Goldstein and still manage bringing Bailey Smith in, right? So then you get the best of potentially both worlds. Have you looked at that option at all, Bryce?
Not yet. I guess my intent was always to get Gawn for that extra security around captaincy. I think that there's probably a gap between Gawn and Goldie of 20 points for the rest of the season, and that's what the difference is at the moment. So, yeah, Gawn is – both of them are priced at what their average is at the moment. So Goldie probably going to keep up around 120, 130. He's currently priced at 133. Gawn is priced at 154, but mainly focused on Gawn or upgrading around not having Gawn.
Now, let's finish on Bailey Smith. Just conscious we've spent a bit of time on, and Bailey Smith is obviously one of the key topics for the week, so we just want to reference him. Now, he's clearly a fantastic buy, right? Like, he had a 3 for a concussion a couple of rounds ago. That's now fully appreciated in his price, so he's dropped, I think, close to 80, 90K across those rounds, maybe even close to 100, which is bloody fantastic. And he's available at 409K. Outside of that 3, his lowest two scores are 77 and 93. Everything else is 100 plus. He's only a second-year player, but he's getting a lot of opportunity. And certainly on the exposed form so far, you wouldn't be too concerned about his level of talent averaging 100 in the midfield. Like, we've seen second-year midfielders do that before. The question is, though, and the one that we've been getting a lot, is what happens when Dunkley returns? What happens when, you know, you get that contention back for points? You know, we had Toby McLean being dropped recently. CJ, you have any concerns about Bailey Smith at 409?
I think not particularly. I think the competition for points thing, I think, really comes down to centre bounce attendances and time in the midfield for the Western Bulldogs. Bevo really likes to just put a core group of players and back them in. Bailey Smith is pretty much always behind Tim English, the guy who's getting the most centre bounce attendances. When McRae wasn't scoring particularly well early in the season, when Dunkley was still in the team, Bailey Smith was still attending all the centre bounces. So I think just based on that kind of exposed form, I'd be pretty comfortable locking him away. He's an absolute steal at 400K. I think in terms of the value proposition, it's just too good to pass up.
Yeah, just the ability to allow you to double upgrade when you have a 400K option just changes the game, really. Bryce, your thoughts on Smith?
Yeah, it's a no-brainer for me. If I'm not getting Gorn, he's coming into my side. You're paying around 80 average for someone who can average 100, 105. I have no concerns. Dunkley's are still a bit away, but even when they're all playing, so Smith, McRae, Dunkley, Bontempelli, Bailey Smith's centre bounce attendances were still up at like 60-70%, and then it's only been since Dunkley's left that he's gone up to like 90s. So he seems to be one of the main ones in there. I've even dropped McRae off before Bailey Smith. So, yeah, just hope that the only concern would be that he starts to tire in his second year with a few games closer together. But you're paying 80s for him. So, yeah, surely you're going to get that return on investment when you bring him in this week.
Awesome. Agreed. All right. I should just mention to a few of our listeners that there are a couple of players that the bottomed out, including James Sicily, who's 40, officially cycles out after 149. So he's about 520, but he'll rock it up. So one of your last chances is to get him. We had a few questions around Zorko. I think Cornelio just had a huge one. So there's the last chance to jump on him. He was at 480 last week. He's closer to 500 now. Elliot Yeo again, you know, still around that 500 mark. So there are quite a few bargains out there at the moment, really highlighted by Bailey Smith. Then it's just a matter of whether or not you decide whether or not to go with a Gorn type. Otherwise, you'd be looking at completing one of your other double upgrades if you're in that cadence with some decent value options. So as I mentioned at the top of the show, we will do a bonus recording just to digest a bit more of the fixture implications, the buy implications. There's a fair bit water going under the bridge. But as you can tell, heavy week, lots of options anyway. And I think we managed quite a lot of pretty reasonable content that will help our listeners regardless. So thank you, gents, for coming on board again. Might throw to you for any final words, Bryce.
Yeah, lots of planning to happen in the next couple of days. So stay tuned for plenty of fixture analysis and also looking at some price analysis, some of those bottom-out primos. So yeah, make sure that you have a look on Twitter for those spreadsheets of mine. And
at Bryce Mitchell, if you aren't following yet.
Let's enjoy this challenging period. I think it's a real chance through the buy periods in previous years, and this presents an opportunity to really go up the rankings if you do some really sound planning and a seeking value and longer term planning rather than being reactionary week to week. So yeah, I guess keep that in mind that this is an opportunity and also a challenge. So yeah, very much looking forward to it.
Awesome. Good to get that perspective, Bryce. And CJ, I'm sure you are very eager to smash your way into that top 1,000 club this week. So we wish you good luck in that endeavor.
Thank you. Fingers crossed. I think I'd just like to second Bryce's idea about planning for the buys. Normally, the buys, we have at least a bit of time to digest in between each week. That's not going to happen this season with the buys. So any time you can spend planning now, I think is going to be worth absolute gold later down the track.
Good point there, CJ, and certainly We'll be keeping our eyes open for any fixture nuggets or whatever. So, again, Twitter is probably the best place if you don't know that yet, for Supercoach news and even AFL sort of late changes and those sorts of things. So, if you feel like a banter and asking a few questions, we'll see you on social media. I'm sure it'll be teeming. But otherwise, you know, thank you again for joining the show. To our patrons, like I mentioned, we'll record a bonus tomorrow afternoon. Hopefully, I have it out in the evening for you. So tight turnaround, but we'll try our best to get more content out there and help with any further advice that we can. So thanks again, and we'll catch you again soon. See ya.
Bye, everyone. Bye.